We'll just see how much time we have. Okay, so I'm just going to talk really quickly about some of the activism that we've been doing. And particularly, I wanted to talk about the Listening Project, which came together this fall, and it came out of this feeling of division in our community. And also because somebody had said to me, like, this is an issue that basically is dead in the water, because you're going to have all of these landowners who feel basically attacked by green environmentalists, and it's going to just be an issue between them. And if you don't have landowners on your side, and if you alienate them and antagonize them, you're never going to get anywhere. So we, on the premise that we went out and just started going door to door. We developed a questionnaire that was a short, like 15-minute questionnaire, non-leading questions, but just sort of trying to elicit from people what their community values are, what they enjoy and care about living in Manhattan, and what their experiences up until now have been with gas drilling and gas development, and also trying to challenge them to make connections between gas drilling impacts and their values. And it's amazing. It is amazing what happens when you just listen to somebody. Most of the people in the project are strongly against gas drilling, but we are not going out to try to proselytize to people or to talk about our opinions. We go out just to listen, and it's been a long time since most people have had anybody listen to them for 20 or 30 minutes. People have really opened up to us, and I think out of the 40 households that we've talked to so far, I think 3 households said, we're not interested in more information, we're totally in support of gas drilling, and thank you for your time. Everybody else has given us our number, their number or contact information, asked us to inform them if there are upcoming meetings, events, or projects planned around gas drilling in our community, and accepted a few pieces of information that we were able to hand out to them. Yeah, I guess we're hoping to finish the project by the spring, and hopefully before Marcellus drilling starts in earnest in our town. But one of the things that's really amazing about the project is it's been useful in our town, in like a lot of small rural communities. Everybody reads a different newspaper. Some people read the Elmira newspaper. Some people read Ithaca. We have a local newspaper that some people read. A lot of people don't have internet. They can't share information online. There aren't, progressives organizations. There really isn't, besides the VFW and the Senior Citizens Center, there isn't a cohesive center to our community. And so when we had an issue of Fortuna Energy using our neighbor's dry well as a disposal site for Trenton Black River produced water and possibly Marcellus spent frack water, we were able to call the people we had talked to. And people came down, and unlikely people came down to the meetings, and were able to feel a sense of solidarity in our community in order to say, this is our community. We're here together, and we have things that we care about, and we want to do something about it. Thanks for listening to me.
Autumn Stochek, farmer and community activist from Van Etten in Chemung County. She was speaking at a community forum on gas drilling in the Finger Lakes held January 10th, 2009 in Montour Falls, New York. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica, U.S., WYQZ, Warrenton, Bealeton, KSOW, Cottage Grove, or WMRW, Warren. We'll continue with the Community Forum on Gas Drilling with the next presenter.
This is Adam Flint. He is co-founder of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition. He's also on the New York State Gas Coalition group, and he's another adjunct professor at SUNY Binghamton.
First, I want to thank you for inviting us. And I really want to say that Autumn's presentation, I think, brings things very down to earth for me. We're from the Binghamton area, and we are surrounded by many communities like this. But because they're in an urban region, we take for granted certain things. And I think it's very important not only that we listen to people in our own areas, but we listen to people across the state. There is a statewide loose network that I'm going to talk about in a minute that is working on this. And I think that it very much needs more voices like Autumn's and probably yours, too, to make clear what's really going on. Because frankly, I think if the regulators, including Cornell Cooperative Extension, the Farm Bureau, DEC, had been honest about what was going on here, we would be in a different place. And so one thing that I constantly try to talk about, well, there's two things. One is it's to the interests of those who want this to go forward helter-skelter to paint the opponents of this as quote-unquote environmentalists. And environmentalists do have concerns, but this is everything. This is communities. This is livelihoods. This is the kind of thing that we force drug companies to go through. We should, anyway, through the FDA, because we ingest those drugs, we breathe the air, we drink the water. That's the same standard. This is health, safety, yes, the environment. It's a long list. The second thing is people say, you know, don't hold things up. Don't slow it down. Well, my sense is that the leasing for the Marcellus, never mind the other formations, started at least 3 years ago. Nobody was saying boo from the state at that time. So if they had been out there informing people about what was really happening, and I'm not even sure, quite frankly, they had the competence to know in many cases, but if they had, then by now we might know a lot more and make informed decisions, but they didn't do that. So if you want to blame somebody for delay, blame them. Oh, and if you want to even go further back, this technology, hydrofracking and I think also the horizontal technology, do you think this was ever developed with the health and safety of the people in the region in mind? I don't think so. Maybe this could be done safely, very, very slowly. Maybe. The more I learn, the less I'm convinced that that could happen. But not with this technology, not with these regulations, and not with these regulators, period. When I first learned about this issue back in June, I was broadsided like many of you. Some of you got broadsided a lot earlier. And I initially was fairly hopeless. I said, oh my God, you know, they've got this spacing bill that's getting rammed through the legislature. Most of the legislators have no clue what they are voting on. We haven't got a hope. Well, I'm no longer feeling hopeless because this kind of stuff is going on across the state. And as a result, partially of grassroots mobilization, but also some strategic actions by some environmental organizations and some very good journalists, the governor put us the brakes on things, bought us a little time. How much time we have, I'm not clear. Obviously, for people like Autumn, the time is funny and has been. So even if we somehow managed to put the brakes on Marcellus for a while, that's not going to help her much. So it's got to go beyond that. What I want to quickly talk about is the organization I come from, the statewide effort, and some of the things that some of us think ought to happen. I want to try and keep it real quick. If somebody could give me like a warning 5 minutes from now. Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition. In my presentation, I talk about some of the big picture items, climate change, peak oil, food crisis. I'm not going to do that now. I am going to say this. Rather than thinking about how we can get our rural economies going again by doing this, what about doing this? What about having localization of economic production and consumption, right? put some real energy and capital and imagination into rebuilding our local and regional economies in the rural areas and the urban areas. Green economies, walkable communities, done in other places in the country and a few places in the state. High road development, not strip mall Walmarts, living wage jobs, growing cultural opportunities that keep young people here. Upstate, it's sort of an old saw to say it's been neglected. Well, there are other things to be done. BRISC was created with the idea that there are all these different ideas going on in different places, but who's thinking about the big picture? Who's trying to, as it says here, braid together these different concepts when you've got people working on food issues over here, people working on transport there? So this is what we're trying to do with BRISC. Be a regional information plus promote new and existing sustainability efforts. Be a source for training and education in this area. Center for networking and incorporation and advocacy. We're very new. We started in the spring of last year. We have no staff. We have next to no money. This is very aspirational, but I think it's going to happen because it's got to, for those of us who want to stay. These are some of the things we're doing, but frankly, what we're focusing on most is the local food system work and the gas issue. Why are we involved? If we want to have local farming and food systems and sustainable, clean environment, is that going to happen very well if we've got this going on under the current conditions proposed? No, not really. I already talked a little bit about this. I think we really need to hold accountable those who have told us lies. I'm just going to say it straight out. Straight out. Straight out, easy, clear lies. I do think that some were simply ignorant, but I don't think all. And quite frankly, while BRISC, I and many others busted our butts going through the so-called scoping process. So you're aware, perhaps, that the governor slowed things down so we could rewrite the generic environmental impact statement in certain ways. That alone is not going to protect us. No way. We're going to have to change the balance of power in this state, period. And as some people in group have been doing this work for a long time, remind me, it could be something else tomorrow. It was something else yesterday. So what it comes down to is we need to take back our democracy, pure and simple.
Amen.
And you know what? They do try and divide us. And they also tell us about, well, there's people who benefit. We need to actually study that. The folks in Otsego County and this group called Shenango, Delaware, Otsego Gas, well, they actually did this. They took the data from the DC's, from their county clerks. They crunched it in terms of where the leases are there, how many owners are there. 300 owners, something like 85% local, 600 properties, 0.5% of the population. But I bet you if we ran the numbers on every county in the state, we wouldn't come up with more than 5% for any of those categories. Okay, that's a politically potent number. So while landowners are important, and I think what you're doing is absolutely strategic, as you described it, so it does speak to some power. The thing is, if you get landowners who stand to benefit to take a change in their stance, who aren't going to change? You know, instead of having someone like me come, or if you have some farmer who leased 200 acres and was totally for it and then comes and say, this is a boondog. That's much more powerful, right? Yeah, in terms of water issues, how many of you know what's happened in the Monongahela River Valley? Anybody? That's, yeah, Pittsburgh. That's where they get their water, flows into the Ohio River, big river. Well, it seems that the processed water in that area has contributed to so much what they call total dissolved solids. The Pennsylvania DEP has ordered those plants to stop, that is the water treatment plants, stop receiving any water from drilling. It's not all the fault of drilling, but they know 25% of it is. This is very big. Pennsylvania doesn't have our Environmental Quality Review Act actually legally stop the damn thing. They're in trouble. We're already seeing accidents. We're already seeing things that we don't want to see here. And I got to go.
I'm sorry.
Faster.
I just got to throw this in here really quick. Sorry. I just wanted to tell everybody that the gas brine from our well, we're currently actually fighting the disposal of it in our town. But it's currently being dumped into Cayuga Lake.
What?
Oh, yeah. That if you go up to the Cayuga Heights Water Treatment Plant, you'll notice that there's these red water hauling trucks. They're 5,700 gallon brine haulers. They usually are DC Boucher, which is the brine hauler for tuna in this area. There's dozens of them per day. They are also doing studies to see if they can accept the Marcellus water as well. So it's happening now and it's happening in the future.
The Cayuga Heights Water Treatment.
Cayuga Heights Water and Auburn. They're dumping it in Auburn too.
Which is pretty amazing when they don't even know what they're treating.
There's big conflicts of interest with local officials and on and on. I'm just going to quickly talk about the statewide work in hand. The New York Gas Coordination Group is a very loose network of a very diverse group of organizations, from the National Resources Defense Council to CDOG to BRISC. It's very loose because we have some very different ideas about how to do things and what to do, but we are coordinating to try and be more powerful together. And these are some of the things that we're proposing to work on concretely, and this one is actually happening. And while I think this is probably the most important thing that needs to happen, and it is happening on a local level, it's not being coordinated in any way statewide, taking back the debate on this issue is critical. And frankly, if you actually examine the industry's contentions, they are so pathetically lacking in evidence that you just simply need to have the organization, the wherewithal, and the message to do that. But if you don't, nothing's going to come of it. We're working on that. Okay. You're already doing this. I think the neighborhood work is critical. It's great to get involved with a group like Shale Shock, for instance, or another organized group that works not on a neighborhood or intimate community basis. But having your friends and neighbors on board gives you a much stronger power base to do anything further. And also, if you don't know those friends and neighbors very well, that's probably a good thing, too. Form a group of your own. Join one that's already a going concern. Really start to hold people's feet to the fire. This is something I think the next speaker is going to talk about. ECL 23, Environmental Conservation Law 23, is the law that was written that says that local zoning authorities matter not except for roads and real estate. So you want to throw up a dry cleaning plant next to someone's house, you're going to go through a ton of hoops in most jurisdictions, but not at the drillers. That law's got to go away. If people are going to be doing these leases, they're not going to have to be at the mercy of these huge companies. This alone would have raised all kinds of red flags in people's minds if they had had some sense of all the different complexities that they had to worry about. Like, for instance, it's going to be a lifetime relationship. Fully fund regulatory oversight. Guess which agency just got an 8% cut? Department of Environmental Conservation, which has been getting cut over the years. They have no capacity to oversee this. Without full protections in place, frankly, I'm sort of going beyond that. But remember whose land and resources these are. If we did want to exploit this resource, we're getting penny ante for it. We're also having it forced down our throats at their rate. And this is a huge resource. Whether we want to exploit it or not should be our business, our concern, not theirs. We should also work for other solutions to this issue in terms of energy, and actually just lowering the speed limit and raising the mileage on cars would do a lot faster than drill, baby, drill. This is stuff I don't need to go into. This is why I do this. This is Marielle. And I personally don't want her to have to live with this. Fort Worth, this is another place, urban drilling, right? All over the place, feeder lines. Check it out. I'm done for now. We'll go to our last speaker. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Adam Flint of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition.
Our next speaker is Jack Ossent, who is a member of FLP. He's also on the Coordinating Committee for Democracy in New York, which is a group that is doing what appears to be apparent here, trying to get us to understand how our democracy has gone wrong and what we need to do in order to get it back so that our government represents us. Jack is a long, long time activist in environmental issues in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. The floor is yours.
What I think we're facing in this country right now is post-peak oil economy, and this is the last gas fossil play in the United States. And the question that we all have to ask ourselves is 2 years' worth of energy to continue to support an honest, sustainable kind of lifestyle in this country worth poisoning our water, one of our most valuable possessions in this whole region? That, to me, is the bottom line. And if your answer is that the water is more important than having these outside corporations come in here and profit and send this gas somewhere else to be consumed, when our water, our land, our soil is left to that kind of intrusion, then I'm going to present some possible solutions, long-term and short-term, to the problem. Let me introduce who we are. We emanated from Finger Lakes Progressives Group and started talking about right-based organizing in communities following our attendance at a democracy school back in 2005. And since that time, after several democracy schools, my wife, who's an attorney, and I attended the training sessions for becoming trainers ourselves, several democracy schools, and we've been developing recently a New York-centric curriculum to teach community rights forums in communities that are facing off against corporate intrusions. This isn't the only corporate intrusion that this region has been faced with. We've faced sewage sludge dumping. We've faced factory farms, you know, the total reversal of community-based farms going into factory farms, which are generating huge amounts of manure that couldn't be spread on the land safely. Longwall mining down in Pennsylvania, where they go in and they strip out coal mines right next to the surface with subsidence occurring, people losing their houses, their wells, etc. Water mining, Barnstead, New Hampshire, where the large corporations were coming in. There was proposed for this area to contemplate some of the large water mining operations to come in this area to take out huge amounts of water. Gasification plants. Currently, Ontario County is facing a gasification plant up the Flint landfill that the proposal would be to burn municipal solid waste with a technology that hasn't been proven to anywhere in this country. Ethanol plants, recently defeated. Fossil fuel extraction, now we come to the gas extraction that's going on throughout our entire region, in fact, throughout from Texas up through the Appalachians, as Chris pointed out. Communities, from my perspective, or our perspective, have three choices. They can do nothing, they can trust in the status, like those three people out of the ones that were interviewed by Autumn down in the Van Etten. They can believe in the system that everything's going to be all right. They can go into the regulatory system, which I'll briefly address later on. And in the regulatory system, you're only allowed to discuss certain things within certain parameters. You're not allowed to discuss, do we have democracy in this country anymore? Do we have the right as sovereign citizens with our communities to make the decisions that are necessary to protect our own resources? Or you can pass binding laws and reframe this issue from not one of how much drilling is going to occur, but whether drilling is going to occur at all within your community. Because you're going to pass a binding law that says that no longer in this community will a corporation be seen to have rights. You remove the personhood of the corporation. You challenge directly that corporation in the face of the state, which is in marriage to that corporation, the right to come in and make those decisions which affect your daily lives. Now, you may say, well, that sounds to me like pie in the sky. Where has that been done before? Well, in fact, it has been done before. Recent examples, Pennsylvania. They passed laws in several communities down there preventing sewage sludge on their farmland. They've said that no longer will a corporation within this township be seen as a person. Also, that corporation will be seen as a state actor. When you kick in the state actor, that means under the 14th Amendment, that a state cannot pass any law which discriminates against another class of citizens, namely us. I'm going very quickly through this because this takes a weekend to explain to this point and where we go from here. In Barnstead, New Hampshire, which I mentioned before, with the two townships to the north of Barnstead, Nottingham and Barrington, both chose to go the regulatory system. They paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to attorneys, and eventually those water withdrawal companies came in. In Barnstead, they passed binding law. They reframed the issue from one of whether they were going to allow how much to be withdrawn from their aquifer. To this day, no water has been withdrawn from Barnstead. The law was passed in 2006. Several other examples exist. Several other counties and towns have passed these. Briefly, there's a cultural anthropologist by the name of Jane Ann Morris. She teaches out at the University of Michigan, and she's written an excellent piece that I'm going to just read a short excerpt from. It's called...
The rest of Jack's presentation had dropouts and distortions throughout as a result of an apparently bad disc I had. So I'm going to revoice his words for you to be sure that they're understandable. So, speaking for Jack Ossent, he begins by reading an article, "Help, I've been colonized and I can't get up. Take a lawyer and an expert and call me in a decade." So what do we do now? Toe the line at an EPA hearing? We dress up as animals to get a moment on TV while we let lying corporate executives lie. That is, we work around the defining laws that are the groundwork for a rigged system. We're looking for favors, lucky breaks. We don't even dream of control, yet we call this a democracy. This is being colonized. Corporation representatives do not feel constrained in this way. Nothing is too destructive, too audacious, too outrageous for them to attempt. After all, they have most of us believing and not even objecting to the idea that corporations have rights. Then there's the zen of describing the problem. We need our storytellers. We need our scribes. We need our analysts. We need our own human fonts of crazy ideas. We needed Silent Spring. By now we have the equivalent of son of Silent Spring, daughter of Silent Spring, second cousin once removed of Silent Spring. But habitat destruction continues as fast as we can describe it, if not faster. Our compulsion to describe the problem, something we do really well, serves a purpose, especially for people who think there's no problem. But the people who need to hear it the most aren't hearing it. We describe the problem to each other in lavish detail, which crowds out efforts to rethink our whole strategy. Are we doing anything other than lurching back and forth between describing the problem and then buckling the seatbelt on our feedback loop? I, for one, think I've heard enough bad things about corporations, and I'm pretty tired of working on campaigns that will not only fail, but fail in predictable ways. How have we been colonized? Let me count the ways. We interpret failures as signals to do the same things over and over again. We are predictable. Our strategies and styles of organizing fracture and dilute our resources. We either accept this dilution as inevitable or blame each other for not organizing correctly. We censor ourselves in thought and action. We act as though if we describe the problem to each other enough, it might go away. And now we can argue about whether we've been colonized or not. Corporate management is popping extra popcorn for this one. But enough of what we do. What do corporations do? Well, corporations organize very successfully. They learn from what the previous confrontation with the community has been like, and they either minimize their losses and move on to another community that isn't organized enough to pass binding law, And if they don't succeed there, they formulate new plans for going into other communities. These are two diagrams. They represent the regulatory system as it exists today. This is the regulatory endpoint, what we're allowed to discuss. This is the hearing setting. So let's say we have a broad-based problem which we have with gas drilling in our communities. It's not just a question of the pollution. It's not just a question of fracturing our communities by pitting one set of citizens against another, one that has an economic interest and one that doesn't, one that has an environmental interest and one that doesn't. It's about all of these things together. But what does the regulatory system do? It says, we're going to talk about where the spacing of the wells are going to be, how close they're going to be together, and how much of this polluted water is going to be spread where. By the way, there's great articles, if you read in the paper recently, about what's happening in Ithaca. POTW, the public-owned treatment works, is saying, we're not going to accept this over here. We don't know what's in it, and until we know what's in it, we aren't going to accept it. Okay, so here's the regulatory endpoint. The corporations and agencies are pushing people down to this point, and up until recently, we ourselves as environmental and political activists have been doing the same thing. Who's the first person that community groups generally call? An attorney. The attorneys say, yeah, you've got to get into this regulatory process. It's the only thing available. Well, what we think in rewriting the strategy is, if you've got this problem of unwanted corporate intrusion in your community, you have a choice as a community to make binding law.
From a community basis. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be challenged. Doesn't mean that the people aren't going to be pissed off with you for having passed that law and come after you. But it is your right to protect your community. The home rule law, which I'll get into briefly, has a policing power within it. And by the way, the Attorney General now has just recently, last month, said that they want to streamline local governments and local laws. Keep your eye out for what's coming next on home rule. But the policing power of a community allows people to pass binding law which says for the health, safety, and welfare of the general population and to protect the property and general peace of the community. It'll be challenged, but this is what we propose that happen in communities today, that we take back our democracy. If there's a majority of people within a community, like Autumn has pointed out down in the Van Etten area, which, by the way, has invited us to come in and do a community rights forum around these kind of ideals, this reverses this triangle to allow the activists that are working with and community organizers that are working with the majority within that specific community to push to make law.
Not to put all of the resources and investment into a regulatory system that's already rigged for an outcome. I've brought several examples, and I'll briefly try to describe a couple of them to illustrate how the corporate state juncture works in New York State. Right now, there's a battle between the corporations that own the proprietary chemical mix that goes into the fracturing fluid. They're saying it's their property. We live in a property society. So there's a face-off. The state says, we're not going to allow that to happen until you release that information. This is all happening behind closed doors. The corporation says, all right, we'll sue you under the Fifth Amendment for property taking. Because what you're saying is that you're going to remove the proprietary nature of those secret chemicals that we use to produce our product. This is not publicized. Also, the Attorney General has just come out 2 years afterwards that there are conflicts of interest that exist on windmill placements between individuals who own the land, who happen to be elected officials, and other people who are opposed. Another thing that has come out, the TRI, the Toxic Release Inventory, which is supposedly a community protection instrument, which says that when corporations come in and discharge harmful chemicals in the community, you have a right to be notified. The Bush administration upped it by revision of an EPA standard to 10 times higher. The attorney general in this state and a lot of other states are suing to have that reversed. The thing is, we worked with those windmill communities where they were contesting where they were being placed. It wasn't a question that they were against the technology, but rather that these corporations were coming and putting them anywhere they damn well pleased. The same thing is happening with the gas wells. There are documented connections of municipal officials who have an interest in this. And there's no one at the state level who's standing up and saying, we need to take a look at the conflict of interest that's taking place in the gas drilling in this area. These are demonstrated examples of the connection of where the corporation meets the political state.
Fortuna, Elmira, Fortuna Corporation, you can go to the website that exposed the contributions coming to politician Senator Winner. I'll name names here. I'm not afraid to do that. He's received tens of thousands of dollars from over $10,000 since 2005 from Fortuna Energy. He's also been accused by Jim Hare, who's an elected official down in Elmira City, of not being honest, releasing his connections to Fortuna and the law firm that he also works at, because he's a part-time New York State legislator. Now, in other states, there is a requirement to release that, and the federal government has a requirement to release those conflicts of interest. New York State does not have that. So this is another thing that we have in terms of that corporate-state connection.
In closing, I want to urge you that if you have the time, and if you feel that it's important enough for you and your family now and in the future to face off against what is not just a single issue, gas drilling just happens to be one example of how the corporate state works in our democracy, our so-called democracy. From my perspective, we need to get back to the community organizing that Adam alluded to. The home rule legislation and the expansion of home rule, so that the people who have to live with the problem that is created have an opportunity to decide. Thank you very much. And those were the words of Jack Ossent of Democracy New York, also a former member of the Yates County Legislature, which I have been revoicing for your convenience due to a bad sector on my recording disc. You've been listening to a community forum on gas drilling in the Finger Lakes in the southern tier of New York State, held January 10, 2009 in Montour Falls, New York. There was a brief question period following the presentations. Unfortunately, it was also in the bad sector of the disc. The concern of toxic contamination was raised by several in the audience, especially of water wells. There is a need for people to perform what is called baseline testing, documenting the quality of the water prior to any drilling taking place. Unfortunately, this specialized test costs $1,800, well out of reach for most people. Autumn Stochek said she's working with others to devise a protocol and seek funding for widespread baseline testing. I'm going to give you some information on upcoming events and websites you may want to write down if you have a pen handy. If you can't write this down, you can email me and I'll send you the information using the email link at the website at unwelcomeguests.org. An informational forum focusing on the health effects of unconventional gas drilling will be held in Corning, Sunday, February 1st, from 1:30 to 3:30 at the Southeast Steuben County Library. The library is located at 300 Nassar Civic Center Plaza in downtown Corning. The event is sponsored by the Sierra Club and is free and open to the public. The phone number for more info is area code 607-569-2114. 569-2114. The forum will begin with a half-hour documentary showing the impacts of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing in Colorado. It features landowners and town and county officials discussing the impacts of gas drilling on their lives. The film also features Dr. Theo Colburn, a research chemist who lives in Colorado, discussing her studies of the chemicals used by gas drilling companies and their role in the disruption of the endocrine system. I'd also like to give you some informational websites for some of the organizations that presented in the program you just heard, who definitely need your help. The first is the Shale Shock Citizens Alliance, shaleshock.org. That's shaleshock.org. Another is the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition at binghamtonsustainability.org. The website for Democracy New York is democracyny.org. I'll close the show with a piece of audio that will flesh out some of the ideas raised by Jack Austin's presentation on the use of local laws to empower communities. This was given at a community forum put on by the Binghamton Sustainability Coalition last fall.
Our second panelist comes to us from Hammondsport. Her name is Rachel Treichler. She is an attorney that specializes in freedom of information, election and campaign law, renewable energy, wind, oil and gas, mineral rights, groundwater, water and riparian rights matters. She has also been involved in what she'll share with the local sovereignty movement and talk about truly what powers do communities have in these issues that deal with the safety and health of their constituents. So please welcome Rachel Treichler.
Thank you for that introduction, Tarek. I live in Hammondsport, New York, also in the Southern Tier. Hammondsport's about 100 miles west of here. And as I drove here this afternoon, I got a chance to look at our beautiful hills, to think about the 1,500 wells that is estimated may be drilled across the Southern Tier, to think about the 2 million gallons of water per well that may be used to break apart the shale. The shale that I thought about getting thicker and thicker under my feet as I drove here to Binghamton, which is sort of at the epicenter of the shale here in our state because it's so thick here. Though actually, as it thins out to the west, in Steuben County, there is more organic matter, and as I understand, it's the organic matter in the shale that is contributing the radioactivity to the shale. So we actually have a little more radioactivity. It's probably why Steuben County has one of the highest incidents of radon gas. We already have that in our area. And I thought about who is it that is going to be making the decisions about where, you know, are we going to have drilling? Are we going to allow hydraulic fracturing? Are we going to allow putting these chemicals, the 283 chemicals, I think is what Theo Colburn has said, that they use in the fracking fluid? Is that going to be allowed? I think Roger has given us an excellent overview here of the DEC scoping process. But it's a process that concerns me because it's not a process that most of us have any voice in. We can present data, but we don't get to make the decision that the DEC, an unelected regulatory body, is going to be the body that's making this decision with the scoping process. But we need to look in our communities at what we can do, what our local governments can do to make decisions for us. And that's what Roger was urging us to do at the end. And I thank you for that, Roger. And he mentioned home rule. We are very lucky in New York that we have a strong home rule provision. There are about 37 states in the United States that have home rule. The different laws vary from state to state. In New York, we have quite a strong home rule provision. Our Constitution, Article 9 of the Constitution, provides for home rule for local governments. It actually is called a Bill of Rights for local governments to indicate how the sort of powers that are being given to local governments. I'm just curious how many of you have read Article 9, have looked at the provisions that our local governments have in New York. Has anybody read Article 9? I see a hand, a couple hands. Read it. If we are going to help our town officials exercise the rights that they have been given under Article 9, we need to know what is in that provision. Home rule in New York has a long history. Actually, the first home rule provisions appeared in our first constitution in 1777. At that time, when the power was being transferred from the English crown to the independent American colonies, New Yorkers put into their constitution the right of local towns to elect their own officials and to make local laws. They kept the local powers that towns had previously had. They made sure that those powers continued through in the new government structure. And in the various constitutional conventions that have been held in our state in 1849, 1894, 1938, each time the home rule powers of the local governments in our state were expanded and strengthened. So local government powers have been increasingly strengthened over time. Most recently, in 1964, there was not a constitutional convention, but people voted on an amendment. Actually, it was 1963, and that is when the provision that we have today was enacted, and this was an even further broadening from what had been in place before. One of the reasons that we've seen this continuing broadening of the home rule powers in the Constitution is partly to counteract what has been happening with court decisions. There's an excellent law review article by a Buffalo University professor going over the history of home rule, and he shows that with each new provision in the Constitution trying to broaden the powers of home rule, that over time those provisions were construed by the courts to actually limit home rule powers. And then there'd be another effort to broaden home rule, and then that would be interpreted to limit it. So we have a very strong home rule powers in our Constitution, and those have been also reflected in the laws that have been adopted under the Constitution. But a similar process has gone on since 1963 in that court decisions have cut back on what these powers mean. There are many interests that probably want to restrict home rule powers and keep these decisions from local governmental bodies. And the citizens need to work to support their local governments to see that these powers are maintained. I think that Dr. Palmer is going to talk further about how we can do that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the limitations on local laws relating to gas drilling. You know that the environmental conservation law does provide that local laws are and ordinances are superseded by the provisions of the state oil and gas drilling law, and this law gives most of the powers to regulate this these activities to the DEC. It's interesting to look at when this restriction was added to the state law, and it was added in 1981, immediately following a decision in Erie County, actually the appellate division court there, which held that the town of Westfield in Erie County had the power to adopt a local law to enforce its zoning restrictions on oil and gas drilling and to require that drilling companies post a bond. And within a few months after that decision was issued, there was a push in the legislature, and the decision was issued in July of 1981, and the provision superseding local laws was enacted on August 26, 1981. A subsequent case, 6 months after that, the trial court in Erie County found that another local law in the town of Kintone was no longer valid, and that was because it conflicted with the state law. And one thing that the court stated in that case, after holding that the law could not be enforced, it said the court in no way intends to belittle the town's concerns in passing their bond requirement. In fact, the recent ECL amendment accommodates these concerns by permitting municipalities to request compensation for damages to property caused by oil and gas operations by granting the DEC authority to impose financial security requirements and by requiring new well permit holders to notify both local governments and the affected landowners of their intention to drill before beginning such drilling. So what the court is saying there is, you know, the law does not permit you to stop the drilling, but the law only allows you to get damages for what might happen as a result of the drilling. Now, there is a movement that among different towns and municipalities across the country, a movement I call the local sovereignty movement, where citizens feel that as citizens in a democracy where the people are supposed to make decisions, that decisions should in fact be made at the local level, and our local governments have an inherent right to make these decisions. Some of these theories grew out of the populist movement and the progressive era. An excellent book describing these theories was written in 1907 by J. Allen Smith, The Spirit of American Law, and he says in that book, any liberal interpretation of the theory of democracy must make municipal self-government a fundamental right which the central authority of the state can neither abridge nor destroy, and cannot even withhold, since it is a right having its source not in a legislative grant, but in the underlying principles of popular government. And a group of towns sort of acting on this principle have enacted their own laws. Over 100 communities, many of them in Pennsylvania, have enacted laws prohibiting various sorts of hazardous activities in their towns. This effort has been led by a group called the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. I don't know if any of you have heard of that organization. They are known for their weekend democracy schools where they give some of the history and the principles supporting this movement. And their website is celdef.org, celdef.org, if you're interested in some more information. I wanted to read the preamble of an ordinance that was adopted in Barnstead, New Hampshire, 2 years ago, they were concerned in Barnstead about large water withdrawals by water bottling companies that were going to take millions of gallons of water from the town. And this is what they said in their ordinance as the preamble. We, the people of the town of Barnstead, declare that water is essential for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, both for people and for the ecological systems which give life to all species. We, the people of the town of Barnstead, declare that we have the duty to safeguard the water both on and beneath the Earth's surface, and in the process to safeguard the rights of people within the community of Barnstead and the rights of the ecosystems of which Barnstead is a part. We, the people of Barnstead, declare that all of our water is held in a public trust as a common resource to be used for the benefit of Barnstead residents and of the natural ecosystems of which they are a part. We believe that the corporatization of water supplies in this community, placing the control of water in the hands of a corporate few rather than the community, would constitute tyranny and usurpation, and that we are duty-bound under the New Hampshire Constitution to oppose such tyranny and usurpation. The same duty requires us to recognize that 2 centuries' worth of governmental conferral of constitutional powers upon corporations has deprived people of the authority to govern their own communities and requires us to take affirmative steps to remedy that usurpation of governing power. So that's an inspiring statement. A number of communities have done this. Most recently, CELDEF has worked with the government of Ecuador, and in August of this year, the citizens of Ecuador voted overwhelmingly to add a rights of nature provision into their national constitution. So, thank you.
That was Rachel Treichler, an attorney specializing in environmental issues from Hammondsport, New York. Instead of the usual theme song, I'm going to close out the show this week with something different.
There are places where there are hills. They're not just called hills, they're really hills. And there are places where there are forests, not like 12 pines, but really forests. There are places where the birds sing. You can hear the eagle call. I know they're out there, somewhere beyond the mall. There are places where there are rivers, not surrounded by concrete, but living rivers with fish in them and frogs and little tadpoles, with ducks and deer drinking by the sinkholes. There are places far away. Trees turn colors in the fall. I know they're out there, somewhere beyond the mall. There are places you can see the sky, not neon signs and billboards, but just the sky. There are places with dirt on the ground, without miles of asphalt, not a car around, where on and in the soil good little critters crawl. I know they're out there, somewhere beyond the mall. There are places like that, and things don't have to be like this. I mean, not just cosmetic changes, things really don't have to be like this. There are places where people know their neighborhood, where people live there, and they think that life is good. There are places like that, somewhere on this spinning ball. I know they're out there, somewhere beyond the mall. There are places that I know I've gotta find, otherwise I will undoubtedly lose my mind. Otherwise I'll end up just like you on Ritalin or Prozac or whatever things you do. I'm going where the water is blue and the trees are oh so tall. I know they're out there, somewhere beyond the mall.